Welcome to Longevity. I'm your host, Natalie Nittam. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology and ancestral health practices to personalized interventions and a very special interest of mine, peptides and bioregulators. Enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Natalie Nittam, your host. If your energy, hair, or sleep feel off, hormones might not be the only culprit, although they can be part of the problem. Iron can actually be the quiet troublemaker. Dr. Amy Killen joins us today to map the ferritin sweet spot. Too low and you'll see shedding and fatigue, too high and estrogen's benefits can stall. You'll hear what the early headlines missed about HRT, how bioidentical progesterone can help, and testosterone options for women. We cover how to train smarter through peri and postmenopause and so much more. All right. Now, as a thank you, I've put together a free handout. Each month, I'm sharing three new habits to boost your longevity. You can access it at natnittam.com/free. And if you haven't already, and you have a moment, I'd love for you to subscribe to the podcast and rate it while you're listening to it today. I would so appreciate it. What if you could hit calm on your racing thoughts the moment you lay down? Every so often, I need a little extra help quieting the thoughts churning in my head at bedtime. And so for those nights, I want sleep support that is reliable, science-backed, and fast-acting, aka TroZ by Troscriptions. Looks like this. This isn't just melatonin. It's a powerhouse. So sometimes melatonin hits the mark, and sometimes you need a little extra help. Aubley pear gives you honokiol and agarin to enhance GABA binding, while adenosine and cordyceps boost sleep drive and deep sleep. CBD, CBN, and 5-HTP round it all out. This is an all-physician formulated and pharmaceutical-grade supplement. Plus, you can easily customize your dose. Every troche is split into four, so you can start with a quarter, move up to a half, three quarters, full troche. It really depends on the individual. So fall asleep easier and stay asleep with TroZ. To get your hands on some, head on over to Troscriptions.com. Make sure to use code NAT10 to get 10% off your first order. You know that feeling when you're firing on all cylinders, mentally sharp, physically energized, and just on point? What if you could bottle that? Even with a balanced diet and regular workouts, I've noticed my energy levels weren't always as consistent as I wanted, especially when I'm traveling through different time zones, which happens a lot. I wanted something that could support my body at a cellular level. In fact, that's what I'm often looking for in a supplement. So I added NMN plus G to my supplement cycle. It's a scientifically formulated blend of NMN, genenosides from Panax ginseng, and apigenin. Together, they enhance mitochondrial function, they boost NAD plus levels, and support cellular repair. NMN plus G stands out because it's designed for optimal absorption. The ginsenosides improve delivery into deeper tissues, ensuring you get the full benefits where it matters most. Plus, it's free from unnecessary excipients, making it a cleaner choice. If you want to try it out, go to wizardsciences.com and look for NMN plus G. Use code NAT15 at checkout to get 15% off your purchase. Dr. Amy Killen, it is such a joy to have you here. Thank you for making the time for me.
I am so excited to talk to you again. This is time number two on this show, and it's always one of my favorite places to be.
Well, and for me, it's like the second time I get to hang out with you in a week. We were just at a conference together, and we got to have dinner. And it's funny, we were just talking about this. We had dinner. You know, there's all these dinners and events and parties and things at all these conferences. And sometimes you go out for dinner with just two people. And that night it was you and PJ Sorbo. We had the best time.
The best time. I think I laughed. Like I had like the sore abdominal muscle thing where like the next day I'm like, did I do an ab workout? Oh, nope. I just had a good dinner last night.
I had the face cramps. Anyway, we are gathered here today not to make you people jealous because you didn't get to hang out with us, but really because we're going to lean into Dr. Killen's genius, which we had to have a meeting before the podcast to decide what areas of genius we were going to move into. Because Dr. Amy, like lately you've been really leaning into hormone optimization, which we'll talk about that in a minute, for women. You talk about men sometimes, but back in the day, it was about sexuality. It was about stem cells were a big deal. And I know that all of those things are still very much a big piece of your practice. So why the switch now? Like, because you know what I mean? Like for the longest time, I was thinking, oh yeah, Dr. Amy Killen, she's stem cells. And then it was, oh no, Dr. Amy Killen, she's all about sex. She's awesome. And now it's like, oh my God, Dr. Amy Killen's all about the hormones. So tell us about this journey. And I, you know, I know they're all tied together, but tell us a little bit about this journey that you've moved through professionally, but also with the audience. Like, surely all of this, there's a method to what's going on here.
There is. You know, it's interesting that you even noticed that. It's interesting. It is all tied together, and I still practice all of these things. So it's not like I've dropped one thing or the other. I still do stem cell medicine. I still do skin health and sexual health. I've always done hormone health. But I think the reason I've kind of started speaking a lot more towards women specifically and about hormones, I think it all has to do with, in the last year and a half, what happened with my mom and her hip fracture.
Yes. Yes.
Tell us about that. So my mom, who is a delightful, late 70s woman, very healthy, but she's like me. She's thin, she's Caucasian, and she has a little bit of osteopenia. I don't, but she does. And a year and a half ago, she fell and she broke her hip. And, you know, she was one of the 20 million or so women who were affected by the Women's Health Initiative, which was a big study that came out and told women that all these hormones, estrogen, you know, progesterone, were dangerous in 2002, and that you should get off all these hormones. And so my mom, you know, didn't take these hormones. She got off of them. And partially at least because of lack of access to estrogen primarily, she developed osteopenia. She broke her hip. And it happened at a time that was just like, it happened at a time in a way that was so bad. My grandmother had just died. My dad was in hospice. My mom broke her hip and now she can barely get around. They didn't know that it was a whole thing. And so I just kind of saw her recovery and how hard it is to come back from a broken hip in your 70s. You know, 25% of women who break a hip after age 60, they don't make it a year.
Wow. That is insane. That's a crazy.
It's a 25% 1 year mortality rate. And of the ones who do make it, about 60% end up disabled, and about 30% end up in a nursing home just because of that broken hip.
That's insane. Why do you think that is?
It's because your body does not heal nearly as well or as fast, you know, when you're over age 50 or 60. And especially if you don't have all the hormones and the things that you need to trigger healing and trigger bone growth, you've also got sarcopenia, you've got muscle wasting, you know, in there as well. And that's always obviously going to be part of it. Your balance is not as good. So all of these things kind of compound each other. So a broken bone at age 60 or 70 is not the same as a broken bone at age 20 or 30. And so anyway, I saw the effects of this broken hip with my mom. And I just realized how little information women and their doctors still have about the benefits of hormone optimization. My mom's doctor, by the way, her orthopedist and her internal medicine doctor, my mom had been taking estrogen for a few years. I put her on it a few years ago, but she was off of it for a long time. I put her on it. So she's taking estrogen. It's her only medication. She's the healthiest person you know. She's taking estrogen for her weak bones. And when her doctor sent her home from the hospital after repairing her hip, he looked at her medication list. He sees estrogen, takes a big red marker and marks through it and says, "You don't need this anymore."
What?
It's the one thing that she needs. And because of the misinformation, he just...
So will she follow his advice or will she listen
she will follow
to her
my
very
advice.
Smart daughter? Thank you. <I'm> horrified.
I got her back on her estrogen and progesterone. But the fact that, I mean, orthopedists who deal with bones don't know the best thing for bones. The fact that women can't find doctors that have the right information, and the fact that there are still myths and, you know, and misunderstandings from a study that was 23 years ago that has been debunked multiple times.
And retracted. Like,
and I mean, it's just.
Wasn't it virtually retracted by the person?
It's not retracted.
Not retracted, but he kind of said, I messed up.
Yeah, there have definitely been pieces where we said we missed that. We didn't understand what we were actually looking at. It was the wrong drug. It was the wrong population of women. But the culmination of all of those things is why I've leaned more heavily into speaking directly to women and their doctors about hormones and why they're so important.
Yeah, no, and that makes all the sense. And I think it brings us to the next point, which is, you know, because some people will say, well, stem cells will fix everything. Like, stem cells will help your bones to heal, and stem cells will give you better skin, and stem cells will do all this crazy stuff. But it's about the fundamental foundation that you're laying that will, like, no stem cell therapy is going to overcome necessarily. I don't think it will, actually. If you don't have your hormones dialed in.
Yeah.
The stem cells aren't, I mean, they might work to a degree, but they won't work as well.
Yes, I agree. I think that is true. I think that the hormonal health is foundational, and the sex hormones, which we've talked about, estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, as well as, of course, cortisol and insulin and thyroid. Like, these are all like a little group of hormones. Those are foundational to all your entire body's health. I think that stem cells are very important. I love them. I think they're great tools, but A, they're expensive. Not everyone has access to them. And so I want to make sure that, you know, I want to speak to everyone. Like, I want to speak to people who have money, who don't have money, who have access, who don't have access. And I think that you're right. I think that you really do want to have a strong foundation of health before doing regenerative medicine type treatments.
Yeah, no, 100%. So we picked a couple of topics because they're the kind of topics that it's so easy for an influencer to say, X needs to be this or else you're going to die. And X needs to be that. And the truth is that there's no absolutes. Everything is about the individual. There's no magic number. It's all about what's the number and how are you showing up and what do you need? It's about your, you know, it's about an individual's lifestyle. It's about their genetics. It's about all the things coming together. So let's start with testosterone for women.
Yes.
And we're going to start for women because there's a lot of people talking about testosterone for men. We know that men, it's their main hormone, even though estrogen is also very important for them. So let's talk about testosterone for women, though, because I was telling you that I was looking through your Instagram and I came across a post and it was about how obviously not enough testosterone for women presents certain challenges, which I'm going to let you outline. But then I've experienced this myself because I have a certain genetic profile that if I go too heavy on the testosterone, I get hair falling off my head, hair sprouting in the wrong places. And like things, my bones are not where I really want them to be. So recently we bumped up my DHEA, we bumped up my testosterone. Next thing you know, I've got like teenage acne along my jawline. I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? So,
yes. Yes.
So testosterone for women. Go.
Go. Okay. So first of all, yes, women need testosterone, just like men need testosterone. In fact, we have more testosterone in our bodies generally than we do estrogen at any given time in our premenopausal life. So we need it. There still is no FDA approved testosterone for women, despite, 15 or 30 different formulations for men, but we'll just ignore that fact. Testosterone is useful for all the same things it is for men. It's useful for motivation. It's useful for sex drive and libido, for burning fat, for building muscle, as well as, just mood and all of those things. And I think that it is one of those things that not all women need testosterone. So that's one thing.
That's an interesting. And why is that? Is that because some women make more, or is it because and are those the women that just get ripped? Or
yeah, I mean, sometimes it is. Yeah. Some women make more, like for instance, women who have polycystic ovarian syndrome tend to have high testosterone and high androgens, and, or, people who maybe don't have full PCOS, but there's a whole great, gradation of testosterone. So, but some women make more. Also, testosterone, it starts going down in women at about age 25, just like men. And it just kind of goes slowly down. It does not fall off a cliff at menopause the same way that estrogen and progesterone do.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that's really interesting, actually.
So it's going down in general, but it's not like a big fall off a cliff. So some women are just still kind of slowly, they're making it. It's not a big deal. Your adrenal glands still make it after menopause. So not all women need testosterone, but certainly many women do benefit from it. And we can decide based on your symptoms and then based on looking at your labs, but not just relying on your labs.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And is that why, because postmenopausal women, and I know Dr. Carrie Jones, who you know as well, she did the most hilarious reel about this, about, you know how when you're going through menopause, you wake up in the morning and suddenly there's a giant hair on your chin that wasn't there.
Totally, totally. Or on your thigh, like a place that you've not ever had a hair grow. You're just like, you just don't, you ignore it. You don't even see it. You're just like, oh my gosh, where did that come from?
How did it grow? And so, so your new BFF is your tweezers, right? Because you never leave home without them.
Absolutely.
So is it because the change in ratios between testosterone and estrogen? Because we know our estrogen does kind of fall off a cliff. So if testosterone's not keeping pace, then
it definitely contributes to those random hairs that we see in women, because testosterone does tend to stay up a little higher than estrogen in menopause. Now, certainly that's not true for every, some women have very low testosterone. And when you look at testosterone, you want to look at your total testosterone and your free testosterone. Your free testosterone is your available testosterone. It's not bound to protein. So it's really the more important of the testosterones when you look at those things. And so there are a number of different things that will cause the free testosterone to be lower, maybe than you would like. And so you have to look at that lab as well as all your other hormones.
Okay. Diving into the weeds for just half a second. Bear with me, people. So sex hormone binding globulin, SHBG.
Yes.
Is that the player that can kind of take your free testosterone and kind of give it a giant hug and not, it's yes. kind of like the equivalent of having, actually, ladies, if you've had babies, when your toddler hangs onto your leg and won't let go, so you can't get anything done.
That is. It is. So both albumin and SHBG will bind up free testosterone. But similar to your analogy, which I like a lot, the toddler. So SHBG is your toddler. It's binding to your free testosterone and making it where it can't do its job. It can't work. But contrary to popular belief, SHBG is not bad. Mm-hmm. Having a high SHBG or high normal, kind of in the normal range, but higher end, is not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. It generally means that you are metabolically healthy and that you have good insulin sensitivity.
Okay.
If you have a high SHBG.
Right.
But then, which is the opposite of what people think sometimes.
Right. So then is there, okay. So then basically this is all driving us to the point of you got to run your labs.
Yes.
Because you've got to be working with a physician who understands these nuances that we're just touching on here, really.
Yeah.
To say, because just looking at a number is not really going to do much. And I also heard you speaking about how numbers are going to vary from one lab to the next. And people are desperate. Like people are so, they're just like, could you just give me the number? Like, what's the number I'm shooting for?
I know.
Just like, that's all I'm not asking for much. I just want one little number.
I just want the dose and the number.
That's
just
it.
Tell me how to take the drug and what the number on the lab is.
And I'll do it. I swear.
I know.
And it sucks because there's not a real answer, but you're going to elaborate.
So free testosterone especially is not super standardized. Depending on your lab, their normal reference range is going to vary. The way that they measure it varies. It's actually very difficult to measure it directly. So free testosterone, you have to look at your lab's reference range. And a tip for people, if they don't know what that is find the name of your lab, LabCorp, Quest, whatever it is, and then just Google LabCorp free testosterone reference range for women. And you'll get a reference range. It's like maybe it's 1 to 4. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see that range. And then that's the normal range for that free testosterone. In general, you want to be kind of the middle to upper end of that reference range if you're having symptoms. Now, here's where things get tricky with testosterone. There's actually not a great correlation between testosterone levels and symptoms as long as testosterone is in that normal range. Hmm. So for instance, if you have a free testosterone in the normal range, you may or may not have symptoms, even if it's, a little bit low end or a little bit high end. We know that there's actually a lot of studies looking at testosterone for female sexual health, looking at like for libido, you know, it's hypoactive sexual desire disorder, it's called. A lot of studies on this. And they found testosterone therapy is very helpful in women for hypoactive sexual desire disorder. So low libido, not interested in sex. Give a little testosterone and it works well.
Okay.
The research shows though that happen, it works well irregardless, whatever the word is, of what your baseline testosterone level is.
So even if you're in range, you may be a high responder to a tiny bit of testosterone for your low sexual desire.
As long as you're not high, as long as your testosterone is not outside of the normal range, like you're high. If you're high, you're high. We don't want to give you more. But if you're in the normal range and you have symptoms, especially of low libido or other low testosterone symptoms, there's a good chance that you'll have improvement in those symptoms, especially the libido symptoms, with a little bit of testosterone.
Right. Assuming that you're attracted to your partner, assuming that
correct,
you're not in the middle of the most stressful event of your life. Like,
yes,
this is another thing that I find, you know, I've told this story a couple of times on the podcast. I run a fairly large Facebook community. I'm not in there as much as I used to anymore, but there was a guy in there who was desperate to hack his testosterone. He was like, you know, his libido's in the toilet. Like, he just couldn't move himself or just couldn't get motivated or the whole thing. And everybody's trying to help him and, oh, well, my numbers seem to look good, but blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it goes back and forth for weeks. And he comes back one day and he goes, I fixed the problem. And everybody's like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like, you fixed your testosterone. He goes, no, I need a new girlfriend.
That's what I was going to say. He got a new girlfriend or a new wife, right?
He needed a new girlfriend. So, you know, this is one point that I think gets lost. I mean, there's a peptide, PT-141, that people talk about a lot for sexual desire. And it happens to work really well for women. It can work for men. My take on PT-141 is you got to find the dose that doesn't make you nauseous.
Yeah.
Because nausea is not sexy
for
anyone. But I do find sometimes there's not enough emphasis that's being put on, and this is kind of like root cause medicine. This isn't even medicine. Like, this is like, you know, we're so quick to go to some of these solutions for these problems when really sometimes what we need to do is do the more challenging, deeper work.
Yes.
Around
them. Yeah. We talk about sexual health as being a biopsychosocial, you know, form of health. So it's biology, it's psychology, it's social. So it's all of those things combined. Yeah. And you have to look at all of those. So very good point.
Yeah. So let's not be reductionist on that. So to finish off with, I had one more question about testosterone.
Yeah.
Transdermal pills, sub-Q.
Yes.
What? Pellets. I have an aversion to pellets only because I've never tried them, but I've heard too many stories of people that get a pellet. It's the wrong thing and they're stuck with it for 3 months.
Right.
Right. So
I mean, all of those things can be good options. I don't think that there's necessarily one best option for everyone. Transdermal, like a cream, for instance, a compounded cream or a gel using the men's gel at a smaller dose are the most common ways we give testosterone. Mm-hmm. It's pretty easy to do that. Theoretically, transdermal is going to increase dihydrotestosterone, DHT, more than other forms. So you may have some of those DHT-associated side effects, which is like acne and the body hair growth and the hair loss if you're prone to that. That's more theory than I think we really see in practice, but that's the problem potentially with creams. But really, they're well-tolerated. I like injections sometimes too, like just a little baby subcutaneous injection, maybe twice a week kind of thing. It's not, you know, obviously the doses we use for women are about a tenth of what we use for men. So little baby doses. I don't dislike pellets for testosterone only. I think that testosterone pellets in women can be very effective. And Dr. Rebecca Glazer has done a lot of research on this. She's a breast surgeon who loves testosterone pellets for women in menopause.
Nice.
And she likes it. She likes it as also as monotherapy in breast cancer survivors who can't take estrogen but want treatment of menopause symptoms. And her research, she only uses pellets. It's GLASER. She's fabulous. She's published quite a bit. And she not only uses pellets, she uses supraphysiologic testosterone levels.
For breast
cancer, she's looking at free testosterone 2 to 3 times higher than baseline, like recommendations. And she's looking at a total testosterone of about 200 you know, 175, 200 in most of her patients for benefits. Now, I'm not saying that's the way to go, but she's published quite a bit on it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of her belief. And then there are other people who believe very much that if you're going to give testosterone, you should always stay within that normal reference range. You should never go outside of it. It should always be baby doses. So it's one of those things like you have to kind of look at the studies, but I do think testosterone can be useful in all the different forms we can give it.
Yeah. So it's evolving. I mean, it's an evolving subject. Yeah. I mean, and this is part of the, when you hear so many of us talking about there's not been enough research on women specifically, this is the outcome. So yes. The good news is there's a lot more attention to it. There's now people who've picked up the challenge and are doing that research. So, and this is why I think this, you know, the first sign of listening to someone speaking and running for the hills is when they're speaking in absolutes.
Absolutely. Yes.
It's kind of like never say never, you know, it's,
yeah. But I think that if you have a closed-minded doctor who only offers you one option, whether it's a compounded drug only or a pharmaceutical only or one form only or one dose only, that to me shows that they don't actually have a lot of experience and that they're only able or, you know, they only know about one way to do it.
Yeah.
And the truth is that you have to be open to doing this in multiple different ways.
100%. Okay. So that's our testosterone talk.
Okay. So we're pro testosterone.
Testosterone, but it's going to be so individual. There's not a number.
Yes.
Sorry.
It's not and sorry. You can't have side effects. Before we leave, the increased hair growth on your body is the most common side effect, even at low doses of testosterone. Mm-hmm. Relatively low doses, you're going to probably have to get yourself some Mayer wax strips or get your laser tech friend to help you out. But a couple of extra hairs on your face, a couple of extra hairs on your bikini line, legs. It shouldn't be a lot, but that's very common. Acne is the second most common side effect. And then you kind of got on the list, and the dangerous side effects are deepening of your voice and swelling of your clitoris, both of which can be irreversible, which is why we don't want to give super, super high doses without monitoring.
Okay. Well, we'll talk to Dr. Glazer because now, of course, there's a bunch of questions on that, but that's...
She doesn't have those side effects. She has not reported them. She talks about them.
Gut health shapes everything from mood to immunity. More and more people are now realizing that. So it totally makes sense that probiotics are everywhere. But notice how many brands flex high CFU counts. 10 billion, 50 billion, 100 billion. CFU really just means colony forming units. And that's the number before digestion. So if they don't survive the digestion, aka stomach acid, they're really just expensive tourists passing through. That's why I use Probiotic Breakthrough. It uses a stress-tested Lactobacillus plantarum strain that showed over 30 times greater survival in bile and intestinal fluid versus generic strains. It also produces protein digesting enzymes, gut calming neurotransmitters like GABA and acetylcholine, and postbiotics to support a healthier microbiome. If you want results, not just label claims, this is the one. Right now, you can save 15% at bioptimizers.com/bionat and use code bionat for 15% off any order. Plus, there's a 365-day money-back guarantee. So literally, you have nothing to lose.
What are the signs that, and you've kind of mentioned them, but maybe let's give people a little recap, that you may want to talk to your doctor about considering testosterone.
Low testosterone symptoms in women include lack of motivation, kind of feeling blah, low libido or desire, or any kind of other sexual issues sometimes, as well as difficulty forming muscle, difficulty burning fat, and those are the main ones.
Those are the main ones. And it also affects bone.
Yeah, it does affect bone. Both progesterone, testosterone, and estrogen are all bone builders.
The symphony. Yes.
Yes.
The symphony of hormones. Okay, moving on.
Yes.
Iron. Do you have your iron around? Because so Dr. Amy, go to her Instagram. She, and you know, I don't know when we're releasing this. You may have to go back a little bit. But when she talks about iron, she picks up an iron.
Like, two irons. I had two irons.
You had two irons and one iron in each hand. The kind that you use to flatten clothes, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love this about you. You had one post that talked about the problems with low iron. And then you had another post that talked about the problems with too much iron. And I don't even know that it was too much iron. It was kind of about, but one was talking about ferritin and the other one was speaking about iron specifically. So ferritin being iron stores in your body. And then, so do you, as I'm making a mess of this.
No, you're doing good. So ferritin is just the way it's your body stores iron. It's like a molecule that has iron packed inside of it. So when we talked about iron, you can check your iron levels directly. You can check your ferritin levels. You can check binding proteins. But in general, ferritin's probably the easiest thing to check. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those tests that a lot of doctors don't even do on patients. But it is really important because there is an optimal ferritin level for women that is, that's maybe not talked about. I think the optimal level is probably in the 50 to 100 range for women. Okay. And if you have too little iron, you can have problems like hair loss, for instance. If you have too much iron, especially over time, it can increase your risk for multiple like cardiometabolic diseases, including heart mm-hmm. disease and things like that. And it also can affect the way that your estrogen binds to the receptors.
Right. So that was the interesting thing. So you were talking about beautiful skin and you were saying, guess what? It might be a good idea for you. And this is where we're going to go back to testing.
Yes.
Like don't just, because you know, the narrative, generally speaking, is that women are genuine and certainly premenopausal women are very prone to low iron. But even postmenopause, like if you're an athlete or if you don't eat a lot of iron-rich foods, like there could be any number of reasons why you wouldn't have enough iron.
Right.
But if you have too much iron, it's going to block those estrogen receptors. And not to mention the fact we don't have enough estrogen to begin with, right? And that affects the collagen formation in the skin, which could exacerbate skin health. I mean, the way your skin looks.
Yeah, too much. And I totally agree. And what's interesting is, so I did those two posts. The second post was about too much iron. The first one was about lack of iron, right?
Yeah.
Second post about too much iron. It was specifically for menopausal women who have too much iron. Here's the range. Like here's the normal range. If you're above this, it's too much. About donating blood and how this can be a really helpful way to reduce iron. I got so many comments about, well, what if I don't have too much iron? What if I have normal iron? What if I'm not menopausal? What if it makes me tired when I give blood? And I was just like, guys, you gotta read the post and the caption. And if it doesn't apply to you, then move on. Just move on.
I know. Just move on. But I find that in school too.
Yeah.
Do you ever find that? I don't know if you teach or when you were in med school, whoever would be talking about something and someone would put up their hand and exactly do that. And the rest of the class is like, you're not listening, right? Is
it that you're people listening? Are just curious and I understand they're always thinking about like their situation and they're trying to figure out how to, but yeah, so iron is one of those, it's one of the many things in our bodies that there's a sweet spot, just like mm-hmm. testosterone. You want to find the sweet spot and you do have to test in order to know it. And again, ferritin is a great way to test that, but all your iron studies at least once a year should be tested. And you can donate blood to reduce ferritin. There are also other ways you can do it by, you know, reducing red meat or reducing iron rich foods if you happen to eat a lot of them. And certainly if you're low in iron, you can take iron, but preferably you'd get it through food because taking iron is really upsetting. You know, it can be upsetting to the stomach, but you know, iron rich foods, whether it's meat derived or other kinds of iron rich foods. Liver, yeah, I mean, certainly the animal products are going to be the best way to increase iron. But if you don't eat animal products, then some spinach and, you know, I don't know, lentils, or I'm not sure what's high in iron. But so you can modify your iron, but you do have to check for it first.
Yeah. I think the reason why I like liver for iron, and as if you're gagging, get over, it's okay. Don't worry about it. You can actually get liver in a capsule. But the reason why I like liver for iron is because iron, like so many other things, it works with other compounds. Like it balances itself out with other stuff. And you will tend to get that complex in whole food.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I think, and I've seen way better results with people supplementing with liver capsules or eating liver, as long as they're not opposed to animal foods, than with supplements.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And if you're going to be doing that, make sure you get your vitamin C at the same time, because that helps mm-hmm. with iron absorption. And then you want to avoid eating iron blockers at the same time. So anything like coffee, tea, calcium supplements, there's a whole list of things, but essentially avoid the things that are going to block iron absorption while you're eating iron.
Love it. Okay. All right. That's our little foray into iron. We did testosterone. We did iron. Our next thing is BHRT versus hot.
Bot. What is bot?
What's bot? Jamie's like, wait, what? We didn't talk about bot. What are you talking about? No fair. So hormone replacement versus hormone optimization. Annika Becca, Dr. Annika Becca likes to say hormone replenishment, which I think is more in the hormone optimization space.
Yes.
And, you know, there was a recent Stitch video that you did on a post from someone else who shall remain nameless, who had come out and taken the position that, you know what, lady, you don't really need hormone replacement. You just need to fix your diet and your sleep and your exercise.
Just be healthy
and you'll be fine. And I remember, and I was, as I was watching that video, I could feel my blood starting to boil. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me right now. Like, you're too smart for this.
It's such bad information.
But apparently not. So.
Yeah. Don't believe that. It's bad information.
And you just had the most gracious, fun, respectful, even though maybe they didn't deserve the respect, but you had a really good response. It was just so well formulated. I'm proud to you on that. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, because there's still, I mean, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, there's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of doctors who are still very much in a, like very rigidly in a, as a matter of fact, I know women who've been kicked out of doctor's offices for asking for testosterone, for example. Like, are you kidding me right now? So let's talk about this concept around optimization versus replacement.
Yes.
Because it is replacement. You're replacing something you've lost, but there's a nuance there. So do you want to?
So I call it hormone optimization therapy, or HOT. And I'm not the first one to call it. Someone on TikTok was like, you can't say that you made this up. And I was like, anyway, disclaimer. I'm not saying I made up the word optimization, but I do call it HOT. I don't know if anyone else calls it. So that's what I call it, because what we're doing is we're optimizing your hormones based on the stage of your life. So by optimizing, it doesn't mean that we're trying to give you the same levels of estrogen and progesterone that you had when you were premenopausal. So to me, the idea of hormone replacement therapy is that we're completely replacing it. We're giving you these big swings in estrogen and progesterone, and things are going way high and way low, and you're having cycles. I mean, if you do that, you're still having your period every month. And some people do.
There's a
like
school
that.
Of thought that does that.
There is a school of thought. The old Wiley protocol did that. But so that's HRT. And then about 10 years or so ago, the powers that be changed the name from HRT to MHT, which is menopause hormone therapy. So you'll hear a lot of the conventional doctors saying that. And the reason that, you know, they had a lot of reasons thinking that you know, we're not replacing the hormones. And if you say replacement, it makes it seem like that you're low in these hormones and that you need the hormone. I don't know.
Low in these hormones.
You are. My concern is we're not just talking about menopause. First of all, we're talking about perimenopause. We're talking about, you know, hormone optimization can happen really at any age. Certainly it's going to happen a little bit more as you get older. But anyway, so I think that hormone optimization, or HOT, is appropriate. It is so safe. And unfortunately, you can't lifestyle your way out of benefiting from hormones in menopause. And you can't drink enough green tea or do enough Tai Chi, or live healthy enough to make your own estrogen and progesterone once your ovaries have decided that they're done.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it just offers a lot more nuance. And I love that you said, you know, we're not trying to restore hormones to where they were when you were 20. And so it gives us space to say, what is the line? Like, it's almost like finding the minimum effective dose.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's where's the line of where we, and it's going to, and here's the challenge, right? You need to find someone who's willing to spend the time with you and with their own education to know that it's not going to be the same for you and everybody and the next person.
Yeah.
And where do we find that line where we keep estrogen and progesterone and testosterone in the system at good enough levels to support? And here I'm going to invite you to give us that beautiful list from top to bottom of all of the different systems that keeping those hormones where they in that sweet spot, which we keep talking, we're going to have to call this episode the sweet spot.
I love it. It sounds kind of sexual too, which is good.
Kind of good. What are the benefits and the downfalls of not maintaining that sweet spot through our ages, and which we're going to talk about when should we stop hormone therapy?
Which, oh my gosh,
I know
yeah.
exactly what yeah. the answer is. That's a one word answer.
Yeah. So, I mean, I will just give you just a short version of the systems that are most affected by mm-hmm. estrogen loss. And estrogen is the main hormone we talk about. Certainly progesterone and testosterone are important too, but especially estrogen for women. And, you know, I think about bones, brain, blood vessels and heart, muscles, pelvic floor. And then, you know, the immune system is another one that is really learning a lot more about the role of estrogen and immune health. So those are probably the main systems. Although honestly, these hormones affect every single system in your body and almost every cell in your body.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. Because if you look at the chronic diseases that develop as people age, the high blood pressure, like women, high blood pressure. I think my mom, last time I checked, her doctor was playing with three different blood yeah. pressure medications because nothing was really working, right? The insulin resistance, the bone issues, even muscles, right? Like yep. when you said muscles, like tearing of muscles, isn't there?
Yes.
There's a big thing about women going through menopause and joint pain and you know,
yes.
torn labrums or pulled tendons and ligaments, all yes. of which goes back to hormones.
Dr. Vonda Wright actually coined the term musculoskeletal syndrome of menopause. And basically she's an orthopedic surgeon who has been studying this for years and has seen that in menopause, because of loss of estrogen, you have arthritis coming out, you have frozen shoulder and capsulitis and osteoarthritis goes up, your muscle loss, tearing of tendons and ligaments, like all of that. Yeah. All those tissues are susceptible to estrogen.
Okay. So for people listening, who are kind of pulling their hair out at this point, forget the testosterone, just pulling their hair out going, but breast cancer, like, isn't it going to give me breast cancer? Like, help us out. Let's help these ladies
yes,
out.
Because it is a myth that estrogen therapy increases your risk of breast cancer.
Full stop.
In fact, in the studies that have been done, there's been about 10 randomized controlled trials at this time looking at estrogen therapy and breast cancer. And the overall rate shows a 22% reduction in breast cancer risk in women taking estrogen therapy compared to women not taking hormone therapy. The problem causer in that initial study in the WHI was the synthetic progestin mm-hmm. that they used. Which was called medroxyprogesterone acetate. Some doctors still prescribe this. I just had someone message me yesterday about this. Do not take it. It is not a good drug. But bioidentical progesterone, which is what we prescribe now, does not increase breast cancer risk. And estradiol or estrogen that we give does not increase breast cancer risk.
Got that?
That's it.
Everybody got that? Please?
Yes.
It's not. And as Amy just said, your doctor, if they know what they're doing, are not taking you back to when you were 20 because you're not like there is a wisdom in the body in the decline of certain hormones of our hormones as we age, like even growth hormone, which declines as we age.
Right.
You could say, well, you know, we have more DNA damage. We have more cells that are damaged. You probably don't want as much impetus to grow as you had when you were younger and you had less of that damage around. But the problem is that the body seems to be kind of in a black or white world, like you're right. in or you're out.
Yeah. There's no sweet spot. Come on, body. We want the sweet spot.
Come on, just keep me up there a little longer. And I also think that our expectations as we age have changed.
Yes.
Like they've just changed.
They have changed.
Take a 60-year-old like two or three generations ago was different than the 60-year-old of today. That 6-year-old would be horrified. She'd be like, what are you doing? Like, what's wrong
yes.
with you? Sit
yeah.
yourself down, relax, have a cup of tea. And we're sitting there going, no, we're going hiking. We're doing all the things. And this is going to carry on till our 70s and our 80s and our 90s. And I'm sure that's why for you with your mom, like it was so heartbreaking. So you have a vibrant woman who's, you know, who took a bad fall and maybe, so was there no osteopenia at all in her case, do you think?
She has osteopenia.
Oh, she does.
And she's been on estrogen for a few years, but had missed out on more than 10 years of taking it because of the WHI. And so she'd been working with, it wasn't even osteoporosis. It's just osteopenia. So weak bones, but not super weak bones, but you know, a fall is a fall, but it is, Yeah, I think it's just so important to at least, I think every single woman should have the conversation with her doctor about potentially hormone optimization, you know, starting these hormones. Now, certainly there will be some women who may not be candidates. If you have had a recent hormone receptor positive breast cancer, the current general consensus is that you're probably not going to be wanting to start hormones, although even that has been challenged lately. But yeah, every woman should at least have a conversation with a knowledgeable provider. And unfortunately, we lack the knowledgeable providers. But I think my goal is to educate both women and their doctors so mm-hmm. that we can start having these conversations.
Yeah, I love that. And it is really interesting. I know, did you ever come across a doctor? I think he's retired now. I think his name was Uzi Rice. He was in Beverly Hills.
He was in
Dr. Seed's mastermind, and he was a much older gentleman. He wore these crazy glasses. He very, very, very interesting character. And he gave a talk on hormone optimization for women. And he told a story of two sisters, one of whom had had breast cancer and the other one who didn't. And he maintained that she could still benefit from hormone therapy.
Yeah.
And she turned it down. And the other sister accepted it. And he talked about 10 years later, two women walk into his office, and one of them is the woman he's treating with the hormones. And he said, oh, you brought your mom. It was her sister.
Oh.
And he was so respectful. He gave a speech that day that brought the audience to tears.
Oh, I love that.
You know,
that's amazing.
He was so kind of just saying, you know, like, women you deserve better, right? You deserve a better conversation. And like Dr. Amy just said, depending on your case and depending on, and frankly, if your doctor's not well-versed in administering hormone therapy to women who've had breast cancers, then you shouldn't do it,
yes,
right? You want to find that person who has this experience clinically and is not spouting off some study or whatever. But it's just not that simple. So I think if people leave with nothing else, unfortunately, it's not a black and white answer, is that you really need to work to find the practitioner who's going to walk with you and look at you as an individual and then overlay the research on top of that.
Yeah.
So we talked about finishing off because I know our time is going to start evaporating pretty soon. And there's this little thing I wanted to do with Dr. Amy before we'd run out of time. And that was to talk, just to give a very short, it could be one or two or even three things, but things I wish that women knew in their 20s and then 30s and then 40s. And
and
we could skip a decade if you need to. I don't think we will. We'll need to.
I can repeat. Right? Okay.
So this is kind of like,
I haven't gotten to practice this, guys, ahead of time. So it's going to be like,
this is hot seat.
I'm a little hot seaty here. Yeah.
You're going to be good.
Let's do it.
Okay. So things you wish that women knew in their 20s.
In your 20s, you have maximum bone density, maximum collagen, and maximum muscle mass. Make sure you build all those things up and enjoy your time in your 20s.
100%. Don't squander it. This is your
Don't squander your 20s.
Full. Your bank accounts are full. Don't be draining them now.
Yes. You're beautiful. You're lovely. Just keep it up. Have fun. But also make sure you build those things up to their maximum levels.
Got it. 30s.
In your 30s, you can start to have perimenopausal symptoms mm-hmm. as early as 35, which comes with bone loss, which can happen before your periods even stop. So it's important to know what's happening with your hormones in your 30s, even if you think things are probably pretty good.
Perfect. So 30s, start monitoring your hormones. I mean, you probably should monitor them at least a couple times in your 20s too.
Yeah.
In your 30s, this is when the game begins. This is when you need to pay attention. Love it.
Yeah.
40s.
In your 40s, you are perimenopausal if you have not already transitioned into menopause. In your 40s, you're perimenopausal, which means that you need to start thinking about your game plan for estrogen, testosterone, progesterone long-term. How are you going to keep those things? Building muscle becomes your job, building muscle and bone, and make sure you're always prioritizing sleep, which is one of my favorite things.
Yeah, 100%. And it's not too soon for hormones.
Correct. It's not.
As a matter of fact, it's never too soon. I think 30s, we might see some use case scenarios as
yes.
well, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that was one of the things that person said. Just fix your sleep. You don't need progesterone. It's like, but if I have no progesterone, I can't sleep.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway, 50s.
In your 50s, you are menopausal, and that means that you are potentially going to benefit from hormones. And even if you don't have symptoms, hormone optimization therapy is generally a good idea. People who don't have symptoms oftentimes kind of get ignored. So symptoms don't mean that you can't benefit from hormones, lack of symptoms, and then continue to prioritize muscle building and bone building.
I'm going to ask this and relate it all to the back. Food, nutrition, how important is it?
Nutrition is very important, especially prioritizing protein, especially in women over 40, because that's so important for building muscle and also for bone.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I think that also in their 20s, women are moving so fast and having such a good time, they forget to eat.
Yes.
And they're so obsessed about their bodies.
Yes.
You got to feed the engine.
Yes.
60s. We're now
60s. You know, I love the 60s because you're settling in a little bit. Like, your hormones should be pretty level. Like, whatever therapy you're doing should be pretty level. You should be pretty happy with it. Hopefully you're rediscovering yourself, but, you know, just continue the protein, fiber, 25 to 30 grams a day, and then make sure you're lifting heavy weights. I want you to be the one at the gym that everyone's looking at.
And then should we keep it 70s?
Yeah, 70s. I know a lot of women who are 70s and still going strong.
Oh, no. I mean, for sure, they're going
yeah.
strong. I'm just saying, are we going to keep going with this?
You can keep. You can stay on hormones. So first of all, there's no reason to stop hormones unless you just want to. But why keep patients on hormones indefinitely at this point? So you're still taking your hormones. You're certainly getting all your preventative screenings and tests. You're still at the gym lifting weights. And hopefully you're playing with your grandkids and traveling and doing fun things like that, too.
100%. So I feel like we can almost keep this going indefinitely.
We can keep going.
Like the 80s and 90s still yeah. also, like, keep the hormones balanced, work with a practitioner who's going to work with you. And I think activity level is the other big caveat
yes.
here. Like, stay active. Your body's always a machine of use it or lose it.
Yes.
Right?
It's strength, and it's also flexibility, and it's also balance. Because if you lose your balance, you fall. And if mm-hmm. you fall, you break a hip. So it's not just strength, although strength is important. Make sure flexibility, balance are in there as well.
100%. Okay. I think we're making this on time.
We're doing such a good job. Pat the back.
Dr. Amy, this has been phenomenal. Thank you so much. Anything we left off the table, anything you want to, last words for the audience, and then tell people where the heck they can find you.
So you can find me at social media, Dr. Amy B. Killen on Instagram, Facebook, all the things, TikTok. I'm also dramykillen.com is my website. I'm working on putting more resources on that, but go to that. I have a top 10 supplement guide for women in perimenopause, menopause on my website for free. You can go to dramykillen.com, sign up for that, and I'll send you my favorite supplements. I also have a supplement company that's a female focused supplement company called Hopbox. Which is this blue box right here.
It's the best.
That is super easy and convenient. And I made it for myself and my female patients. So check that out, hopbox.com if you're interested. And then finally, I have a clinic in Austin and soon in South Florida that's called Humanot Health. That's a longevity clinic franchise that is going to be coming to different parts of the U.S. But if you are in those cities, Humanot, like astronauthealth.com, if you're interested in being a patient.
Thank you again. Hotbox, you guys, is really interesting. And also, it's the most fun supplement you'll ever take, because every day has a little pouch, and the little pouch has something on the back that's really interesting. It could be a joke. It could be like a bad pun, but it's always entertaining and it's always educational. So thank you again. And I can't wait to see you again in real life.
Thank you. This has been so fun. Bye-bye.
So fun.
Hey folks, just a quick reminder that all of the information presented in this podcast is for information purposes only. No medical advice, no diagnosing, no treatments suggested here. Before you try anything that you hear about or learn about here, make sure that you check with your medical provider.